Hello, 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 and welcome to Friday's edition of Coffee Talk Jazz Radio. Today is Friday, January 21st, 2011, and we're kicking off our Living Legend series. We have an incredible show today. I am your host, Ms. Bridget Lewis, and we have a very special co-host with us today, DJ Eric Anthony. And yes, we are broadcasting live from Los Angeles, California. So grab your coffee. It's time to get cozy. Some of our listeners may be asking, what is a legend? And why did you create the Legend series? I'm glad you asked. A legend today is someone of noted celebrity with a larger-than-life persona and accomplishments whose fame is well-known and that aptly describes today's guest. His name is Larry Graham Jr. He is an American baritone singer, musician, songwriter, and chart-topping recording producer. He is best known as both the bass guitar player in the popular and influential psychedelic soul-funk band Sly and the Family Stone, and he is the founder and frontman for Graham Central Station, better known as GCS. His bass-playing skills and abilities are unmatched. His singing and musical style is classic and timeless. And guess what? That deep baritone voice gets me every time. He is recognized around the world as the greatest funk bassist ever. I'd like to welcome the newest member to the Coffee Talk family, our friend to the show, Mr. Larry Graham Jr. Hi, Larry.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing wonderful here in nice, sunny California, Los Angeles right now.
Good. Well, first of all, let me say Happy New Year. We are so excited that you're here.
Well, thank you, Wilma. I'm excited to be on the show.
God, we're just thrilled. I want to introduce you to my very special co-host today, Mr. Eric Anthony. And Eric, please say hello to our guest, Larry Graham.
Hello, Larry Graham Jr. You're the man, I'm telling you.
Hey, thank you, Eric. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good.
Glad to be able to talk to you.
Good. Well,
the name Eric, especially me, my half brother, that was his name. So, you're good with me.
Ah, you're the best. Thank you, sir.
I love that. Well, the studio is all abuzz. We're all excited, and I am so excited, Larry, because you're kicking off the Living Legend series. But before I get started with our questions, I want to thank your manager, Kenny Stevens, who coordinated our meeting. So, Kenny, if you're listening, thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Well, I'm sure he'll appreciate that shout-out. He's a good man.
Okay, great. So I want to kind of take it back to, even before we go back to the early days, you're just back from a world tour. Oh, my goodness. We have been tracking you, Larry, and trying to get you on the show for a while. And you're just back from Tokyo, Madison Square Gardens. You've been to Akasawa, Japan. You've been to Belgium. So first of all, tell us about playing at Madison Square Gardens. I'm just thrilled about that.
Well, that was a special treat for me when we played there a few weeks ago with Prince. Of course, he is one of my closest friends, and in fact, we're neighbors there in Minneapolis, and he's like a brother to me, so to play the garden with him was special. It was extra special for me, too, because the last time I played in a group that I was a part of, I was in Sly and the Family Stone, and so to be back in the garden with my own group, Graham Central Station, was really a special evening. Had a few flashbacks, good ones.
Well, God, that's so exciting. And please tell Prince that Miss Bridget said hello, and we have to have him on the show. He's part of the Legend
well,
as well.
Yeah, he definitely is.
Awesome. Well, here's what I want to ask you before we go back to the early days. Because you have been to Helsinki, Finland, you've been to London, England, you've been to Copenhagen, your passport has been stamped many times over. Do you have a favorite country?
Well, I think this time what was really interesting to me was going to Turkey. for the first time to play. I had been there a couple of times before, but not to play, just a brief visit. But this time was to play, so I wasn't really quite sure of the reception that we would get, although I was hoping for the best. And it turned out way beyond and above my expectations. So that was really a treat. And then the following 3 days were off days for us before we had to go and join Prince and Elvis France for a festival there. So we had 3 days off in Turkey, so I got a chance to really see the country. So I really, really enjoyed that as well. And, of course, I'm always looking forward to going to Japan because we get treated so well, and the audience there is they're just so into the music, so we look forward to that too. But, I mean, I love Europe too and the U.S. I love all of it. I don't really have one that stands out at the top, you know, because all the audiences are all good. It's all positive. It's all, we get a lot of love, and people are into the music. People that come to our shows too appreciate live music in today's world. And one thing I noticed too is not only in the United States and Europe, but Japan and other places too, the adults are bringing their children to the concerts to hear live music. And I think that that's major because a lot of the young people get exposed to music that sometimes when they go see the performance live, it's not always live, you know. And so the people that come to the show have a deeper appreciation for me and all of the musicians that are playing live music.
All right. So that multi-generational thing is carrying on. I love that. So I want to go back to the early years. Now, you're from the great state of Texas, and so am I. Houston girl.
All right.
yeah. So you were born in Beaumont, Texas, but you were raised in Oakland, California. So just kind of take us back briefly and tell us a little bit about growing up in Texas and then going forward, moving on to Oakland.
Well, my mother and grandmother, my parents and my grandmother as well, we all moved to Oakland when I was three.
Okay.
So I didn't get a chance to know a lot about Texas at that early age. So my memory actually takes me back to Oakland, which is really where I grew up.
Okay.
And Oakland, of course, was and still is a very unique place for producing musicians. A lot of talent has come out of Oakland.
Sure. Yeah. I know. Absolutely. So at the age of five, you began preparing very early for life as a performer, and my understanding is that it's like music was just in your blood, because I know your mother played piano, your dad played guitar, so you learned to tap dance early, you began to take piano lessons. So did you just kind of like innately know, even as a little guy, that this is exactly what I'm going to do?
Oh, I knew I wanted to be in music. Like you said, my mother and father were both musicians, and so I always had a love for music. And then my mother, as an entertainer, band leader, she did a lot of traveling in my early years. So for the most part, my grandmother was the one that was raising me. And so she saw to it that not only did I have dancing lessons early, but piano lessons. I took piano lessons, and then I took drum lessons. I played drums in school and the marching band and also in the school orchestra, junior high and high school. I took clarinet and saxophone. And I wasn't quite sure what instrument I wanted to play. I just knew I wanted to be a musician and a singer. And then I used to sing a lot. I used to sing a lot of Frankie Lyman's songs. That was before my voice dropped. And then I woke up one morning and discovered that my voice was no longer up there with Frankie Lyman. Good morning, Mom.
My goodness.
Yeah, so I just kind of learned all the instruments. And then when I was 11 is when my father gave me his guitar because he wasn't going to play anymore. And that's really what led me to the bass, which is what I started playing when I was 15.
All right. So by the time you're in your teens, you had played a number of instruments: drums, piano, guitar, bass. I mean, harmonica. So you're like a one man walking band. You could do it all.
I couldn't make up my mind which one. And then, you know, as you probably heard the story, I just kind of got stuck on the bass by accident. I wasn't intending on being a bass player.
Wow, my goodness. Well, I don't want to cut you off, but I can tell you, the callers are calling in. The boards are lit up. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to open up the boards, and we're going to take a few questions, and then we're going to go ahead and we're going to play some music, and then my co-host, Eric, is going to ask us a couple of questions. So we're going to go ahead and open up the first line.
Okay.
Hello, and welcome to Coffee Talk Jazz. Please tell us your name, who you are, and what your question is, please. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi, you're on live with Miss Bridget Lewis, your host of Coffee Talk Jazz, our in-studio guest, Larry Graham, and our co-host.
Oh,
hi.
Wonderful. Hi. Ma'am, could you hold on just for one short second, please?
Okay,
hold
you
on.
Know what, ma'am? We're going to go ahead and mute your call. We're going to go ahead and we're going to take the next call, but okay, just stand by. Okay, Larry, I think you have her so excited she couldn't even believe that we took her call. So we're going to go ahead and open up the board. Okay.
Surprise.
Hello, you're on live with Miss Bridget Lewis, the host of Coffee Talk Jazz, and our in-studio guest, Mr. Larry Graham. Please tell us who you are. Where are you calling from, and do you have a question for Larry?
Yeah, my name is Terry, and I just want to know, is he going to be doing anything up here in the Seattle, Tacoma area?
Oh, okay. All right, Larry, that question is posed for you.
Yeah, we don't have anything planned as of yet, but I think that in 2011 we're going to be doing more shows in the U.S. than we did in 2010, and so I hope to get up that way. I think the last time we played there was the Paramount. I don't know if it's still over there or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the last time we played there. And so I hope we get up that way. I love that part of the country. It's beautiful up there.
Yeah, because I
lush and green.
I still got some of your old music back from the day.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
My favorite song is Sweetheart, what you did on your One in a Million You album. I love that song.
Oh, okay. I'll pass that on to Tina. She'd like to hear that. It's about her.
All right. All right, we got the classic and timeless. It's coming, okay, from 1980. Chart topper, it's coming. Okay, well, thank you for calling, Ronald. And please hold on and stand by. We have another call that's coming in. Hello, caller.
Yep.
You're on live with Miss Bridget Lewis from Coffee Talk Jazz Radio and our in-studio guest, Mr. Larry Graham. Please tell us who you are, your name, and where you're calling from.
Hello.
Ma'am, do you have a question for Larry?
Jimmy.
Hi, Miss Larry Graham. What's going on? The Funk Master.
Oh, everything is fine. How you doing, man?
Good, bro. You know what? I don't know if you remember me. Bassist used to funk back in 1979. Took a picture in Oakland, California. I actually had that picture on MySpace for some time. Well, a couple of years ago. But I see you left MySpace. It was a picture with a limbic bass, and I had this crazy outfit on with my hair sprayed all.
Okay. All right. Maybe that'll leave it.
Did you hear it? The phone cut out. Did you hear the rest of this statement?
Yeah.
You know what?
He's coming right back.
Okay. All right, I think they're having some technical difficulties, so we're going to go to the boards. Thank you, Larry, so much for entertaining their call. So we were talking about you being a multi-instrumentalist, and you were saying originally you weren't going to play the bass, and after listening to songs like Earthquake and Groove On, it's amazing to me. Got more calls are coming in. Okay, callers, I just want everyone to know that I see your calls. We're going to open up the board in just a few minutes, and we want to give Larry an opportunity to answer some of the questions. Okay, so you got everybody just chomping at the bit. They're so excited. Okay.
Oh,
Eric,
good.
I'm telling you, the studio is all abuzz. The thing that is so funny is that for the last 3 months, I've gotten so many requests
to have you on the show. And I said, well, let me create and develop a show. I said, where we want the best of the best that's on the show. And that's when we came up with the Legend series. And so you were numero uno. You were the first person that everybody wanted to see. So, again, we're just...
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So we're so excited that you're here. And I want to give a shout-out to my brother-in-law, Mr. John Wheatley. He loves you, Larry. Oh, my goodness. We have to get a picture of him.
Oh, thank you.
We have to.
Where is he?
He lives in Los Angeles, but he's actually working. He's actually working today, but he loves you and Prince. He just, oh my God, that's all he talks about is Larry Graham and Prince. So we'll have to get a photo for John. Okay.
Well, shout out to John.
Yeah.
Tell John that we're in Los Angeles now enjoying some of his nice weather before we head back from Minnesota tomorrow.
I know. So, oh, my God, it's so warm. So we were talking about your mom. We were talking about you joined your mom's band. I believe the name of your mom's band was called the Dale Graham Trio.
Correct.
And you actually played piano and guitar in her band.
Yeah, I was playing organ, actually. When we first joined together, I was playing guitar because from the time of 11 up until then, I taught myself how to play the guitar. So my mother decided to move back to the mainland, and we started this trio with my drummer and me on guitar, her on piano. But this one club that we worked in had an organ, and it had bass pedals on it that went halfway across that you could play with your foot. And so I learned how to play the bass pedals at the same time as singing and playing the guitar. So we sounded full because now we had bottom. So we got used to that sound, and then the organ broke down, and now we didn't have bottom, and it sounded empty. So I went to the Music Unlimited in San Leandro, California, renting a bass, St. George bass, and I'm thinking I'm just renting this until the organ could be repaired. But as it turned out, the organ couldn't be repaired, and so I got stuck on the bass. That's how that happened. And then the next step after that was my mother decided, well, we're going to just be a duo, just bass and piano with no drums. And so now that's when I started thumping the strings for making up for not having that bass drum and plucking the strings to compensate for not having the snare drum for the backbeat. And that's how I came up with the thumping and plucking. And after doing that, by the time Sly heard me when I was 20, 21, and I'd been doing this, that was my style of playing, he asked me to join his band, which turned out to be Sly and the Family Stone. And that's how my thumping and plucking got popular, through songs like Dance and the Music and Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself and others.
Wow. Now you're taking me back because now I'm really getting ready to tell myself. Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself was one of my favorites. It reminds me we used to have the dances in the school gym with the little mirror ball dancing around. Yeah. I'm taking myself back. And back in the day, we used to have rent parties. So, okay,
there
I'm telling my age, so I'm going to stop talking. Okay, Eric, do you have a question? Do you have a question you want to ask Larry?
Yeah, I've got lots of questions, but I'm just listening in amazement to Larry, and I'd like to ask, because Larry, I grew up specifically on funk. The funk had the largest impact on my musical taste, and with what you were able to do with your thumping and plucking style, I would say that that's definitely a hallmark of funk music. And I'd love to hear you maybe elaborate on how it just grew from that, thanks to you.
Well, what happened was with the success of songs like Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again, other bands, you know, especially bands that would do cover tunes that were out, that were hit records, if you were going to play that song, then you pretty much had to play the bass like that. With the thumping and plucking, because that was a big part of the record. And at first, a lot of bass players didn't know what I was doing because there weren't a lot of videos being made then. But then when they saw us on TV shows and they saw me from pumping and plucking, they could see what I was doing, then they would start to imitate that to cover our songs. Then they started incorporating that style in some of their original tunes. And so then there were other records other than Sly and the Family Stone started coming out with bass players thumping and plucking.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it was a beautiful thing. I mean, gosh, and you know, thanks to you and your mom, and I guess her deciding to take the band back to just, you know, the two of you, you had to improvise like that. It was fantastic. And I don't know if other people know some of the people that have obviously been influenced by you, but there are others, I'm sure. I believe you just got off a tour with a young cat by the name of Marcus Miller that
yeah,
I happen to know. And I don't know, maybe you can tell the folks a little bit about that.
Well, I got a chance to play together with Marcus in Japan not that long ago, and it was really, really quite a treat. It's usually difficult for two bass players to occupy the same space. You know, and you know, it's kind of like rarely you will see two drummers. It has happened. There have been some times when you find two guys who can play together, but
right,
two bass players is rare. But what helped is that Marcus is into my music, and he knows my music so well that he's able to play around what he already knows I'm going to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we can play together without bumping heads. And there's not too many bass players that I can say I can do that with, or maybe that I can do that with each other. But I did that before with Stanley Clark, and of course Prince knows my music backwards and forwards, and he's a bass player, so I can play with him. Rhonda Smith, you know, it's a few folks I can do that with, but it's rare. And Marcus was just not only is he an excellent musician, but what a nice person.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, he is. And you mentioned some great players. I actually had the opportunity to meet Rhonda Smith, and how was it like working with a female bass player, assuming that there aren't many that I've seen or come in contact with, and Rhonda's excellent. I mean, just like you, I'm sure you schooled her. I've heard Prince say it that, you know, she's learned from you, as many people have. What's that like, Larry?
Well, first of all, she's a very nice person, really down to earth, and we got along very well. And, you know, we could play together, but most of the times she was playing the Prince show, and then I would come out as a special guest, and I would do my thing. But most of the times when she was playing with Prince, it would just be her. But what I really respect about her, too, is not only did she learn my style growing up and had that as an influence, but she also plays a mean upright bass.
Yes.
And, yeah, she works at a electric upright. I mean, it's just fantastic. So she takes my stuff, but she has her own style and her own thing that she does, like Esperanza Spalding.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
Right.
I went to go see her, and you know, with that live and singing, it was just awesome. So I appreciate bass players that will take the time out of their life to learn how to, you know, play like I play, and that's the greatest compliment that you can give somebody, is to imitate them like that. But I also appreciate the bass players that take it another level and do their own thing as well.
Yes. Larry, you mentioned your voice changing when you stopped singing those Frankie Lyman songs. About what time was that, and did you realize that your voice was so unique?
About around 13, around 13, 14, yeah. I never went through that phase where some young boys go through where you get that little crackly voice, kind of in between. Sometimes it'll squeak or crack, and mine just changed overnight. with no warning, no heads up, and nothing. So by the time my mother and I started working together when I was 15, it was already deep. And so when you work nightclubs and lounges, you make a lot of money on tips, especially when you know the song that the people in the club are requesting. So she would sing all the Dinah Washington, all the Elvis Chair, all the ladies' songs. And then she had me sing all the Nat Cole, the Billy Eckstein, the Sinatra, the Ray Charles, and all that stuff. And so I got into ballads then at an early age. So by the time I joined Sly and the Family Stone, the first song that I sang a solo on was a ballad called Let Me Hear It From You.
Okay.
And then that, no doubt, those early ballad days contributed to me later coming out with One in a Million.
Yes, yeah, hey, that was me in high school, Larry. You know, a lot of slow jams to that song. Thank you.
Wow. You're welcome.
So Larry, so in 1968, you joined the group Sly and the Family Stone, which is known the world over, and their first album was entitled A Whole New Thing, and then you provided a way for people to hear you all over the country by your unique bass playing, and in addition to that, they came out with hit after hit after hit, Dance to the Music, Everybody is a Star. Again, your voice was heard, your signature Thumping and Plucking was heard, and then you all were inducted in 1993 into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Are you surprised by your success, Larry?
I didn't get into music because of thinking about the success factor and all that it turned out to be. I got into music because that's what I love. That's what I always wanted to do. But with the success that came with it, I'm very appreciative of that and very happy about that, mainly because I've been able, you know, through the success of like Sly and the Family Stone and Graham Central Station, contribute something to the world of music, you know. And now the way I play is it has become like a way to play. It's been a contribution that will be around for a long time. So my contribution in that way makes me feel good. That's the most important part of the success of our music. And the other thing is to be able to contribute as a singer. I never expected the success of a ballad like One in a Million You, but I believed in it after we cut it, and especially after we mixed it.
I'm sorry about that.
You there?
Go ahead.
Yeah,
no, I'm here. Sorry.
Yeah, that ended up mixing the record together, the One in a Million. And when I heard it in the mix, I believed in it so much that I actually had to go against the record company, who didn't want me to come out with a ballad because I've been having so much success with funk. So in my contract, I had the right to choose the single, and so I went against what they wanted and chose One in a Million You. And then after it started doing well, of course, then they jumped in and helped promote it some more.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Let me tell you, One in a Million, every wedding I remember like it was yesterday, every wedding that I went to, that was the theme song. And I know a lot of babies made by One in a Million. So I'm sure you probably heard this before. I'm sure it's not a surprise. But let me ask you this. Is there one common thread or trait that describes a great musician?
Well, you know, it really depends a lot on how you're accepted by the people that love your music. I mean, if nobody gets behind you and support you, you could be a wonderful musician or a vocalist, but if no one ever gets a chance to hear you, or no one gets a chance to really experience your gift, then there you are. But if you, you know, are blessed with that happening, like for me, if Sly had never come into the club and heard me doing my Thumping and Plucking, which goes back to, there was this lady, which I didn't know, that used to come in the club. My mother and I were working in San Francisco in a place called Relax with Yvonne, right almost on the corner of Hayden and Ashbury. And she used to come in the club, and I found this out years later, and she was a fan of my mother and I. And she also was a fan of Sly Stones, who was on the radio at KSOL at the time. And she found out he was going to be starting a band, so she took it upon herself to start calling the radio station and bugging him, you got to hear this bass player, you got to hear this bass player. And because of her persistence, he did come down and hear me play, loved what he heard, and asked me to join the group. If it weren't for that, then, you know, that jumping and plucking would have never been heard. And going back to what, you know, Eric said a minute ago, if it hadn't been for my mother deciding us, you know, for us to go duo, then, you know, the jumping and plucking would have never come about. It wouldn't have been a need. So, you know, the success really has contributed to the music being out there, but there would be no success without the fans who love the music and want it to be a part of their lives.
Sure, I agree with that. Initially, when I started to develop the show, Larry, you have such a large body of work, and I said I'm going to try and take it by decades. You have been in this game for 40 years. What is the secret of really the what is the secret of your staying power? Because most people they don't really survive 20 years.
Well, I think one thing that has really, really helped me is being around positive people, being around positive musicians, you know, and even over the years when I've used other musicians other than the original band members, it's usually folks, I didn't plan this, and it's not a requirement, but it's usually folks that was raised up on my music through Sly and the Family Stone or some earlier Graham Central Station and stuff. So they'll come in with their youth and freshness and excitement about being in the band, and I think that that helps. And I also try to keep my ears and heart open to, you know, what's going on in that particular decade, because music has shifted over the last four decades, and I try to stay current with what's going on. You really can't help it if you're listening to what's going on around you, and I think that that helps too. And then the other thing is I think that the fans that I've had from early on, from the 68, from the Woodstock days, 69, early 70s, GCS, they're still with me, and they're still coming to the shows, and they're still supporting the music, and I think that that's major.
All right. That was a great answer, because I'm thinking, I said Graham Central Station, were you thinking the 70s? I think I was like 15. Yeah, I was about 15 in 1974, and you had such hits as Can You Handle It, Release Yourself, Feel the Need, and then that same year, GCS was nominated for a Grammy for Best New Artist in 74, and at that time, did you realize, okay, I have changed the game of music?
Well, I think I really realized that I had some influence on the world of music when I saw other bass players imitating my style, and when I heard my style being played in other bands' original music. There were other groups that were coming out that's how the bass players were playing. That's how they were throwing down. And when I saw that, then I did realize, you know, you created something here that has really contributed, you know, and it's not just a song that came out and was popular and it did well and you were able to contribute that, but it's a style that's incorporated into other people's music. That really is major to me in my heart. That touched my heart the most musically.
Okay. All right. I love it. Well, gosh, you've given me so much great information. You've inspired Marcus Miller. You've inspired Prince. My goodness. Let me ask you this, which is something that I heard Prince talk about years ago. How important is it for artists to own the rights to their mastered recordings?
I think it's very, very important because, you know, those are like our little musical children that we give birth to our songs, you know. And for someone else to end up owning those songs and, you know, their families, children, grandchildren, the ones benefiting from it down the road as opposed to the ones who created the music, you know, I don't think that that was a fair deal. And I think that the creators of the music should be the ones that should end up owning the masters, you know, if not exactly right in the beginning, at some point along the way, we should own our masters and be able to do what we want to do, when, you know, with our music and have the right to do that. So, yeah, you're right on that.
I'm around musicians all the time, and just some of the stories that I hear, you know, they've written songs, and because of the way that the contract was written, that someone else is actually reaping the benefit of a song they might have written 5-10 years ago, and BMI is still, you know, generating royalties, but someone else is getting it, but then they hear about it. So it kind of puts like a little fire, kind of puts a little fire in your feet. So I was just really curious, you know, about that.
Yeah, that happened to me, it happened to Prince, it happened to a lot of artists, most artists back in the day. Very few artists end up owning their masters. And also the royalty rates, what artists would get paid per unit sold, also was just crazy. I mean, it's not fair, you know. So today, one thing that musicians now have to their advantage is there's other ways to get the music out there to the people. There are downloads and, you know, there's the internet. And so there's some negative sides to that too. But especially for new musicians, it is a way to get your music heard if no record company comes along and, you know, gives you a deal. It's not all just dead. There is a way to be exposed now. And also when I was growing up, the only way other people got a chance to hear you, you played some of the local nightclubs in town, and you could be known locally. But now you can actually get music out there and be exposed, you know, all over the country or the world. So that's a plus. But then again, there's abuse with that too. So, you know, you got the good and the bad. Let's enjoy the good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Eric, do you have a question for Larry?
Yeah, I'm just listening to all the great things Larry's saying. Larry, you mentioned the kids are coming to your shows now, actually the children of some of your original fans, maybe even some grandchildren.
Right.
And they're hearing live music, which is a great thing, and I believe music is a gift, personally. What do you think it means to young people to hear some of this stuff? I'll give an example. Snoop Dogg, a younger artist, he oftentimes calls Charlie Wilson his uncle, or R. Kelly may call Ron Isley, you know, a mentor to him, or Prince, who's worked with Miles, Shaka, George Clinton, Maceo, Mavis, Patti, and yourself. Is that a good thing? I think it is, to let younger people that may not hear some of these artists get exposure, and then at the same time they get to hear something that is real and authentic and, you know, kind of the old school way of paying your dues and learning your craft. What do you think about that and going forward in the music business for young people?
Well, I think it's good when parents expose their children to live music and help them to appreciate how important live music is to create more music, as opposed to, you know, I'm not knocking sampling and stuff like that, but, you know, that's music that was created already. Who's going to create the next generation of music? You know, you have to know how to play something to create new music. And so I hope that a lot of these young ones, and I've heard from many personally that they are being inspired to learn how to play. There was issues and are issues with having enough instruments in school. You know, I think instruments were a lot easier to come by when I was going to school. which is why I had a choice to choose from a variety of instruments, whatever I wanted to play. It was pretty much available there at the school, whereas now it's more difficult to come by. So one thing that really inspired me is I saw this guitar, and I really, 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 really wanted it. This is when I was 11, and because the guitar that my father gave me was a great big jazz-style Epiphone guitar, and I probably didn't weigh 100 pounds, so with this big old guitar around my neck. So I saw this little white Supro guitar. I was walking home from downtown one day, I went down to get my grandma's coffee, and I saw this white guitar with gold knobs in the music store, and I ran all the way home. I would normally take the bus, but I didn't want to wait. And I was begging, Mommy, you got to give me this guitar. I just begged and begged and begged. And with the little money that she had saved up, she made a sacrifice to go down and get me that guitar, which really inspired me to really learn how to play it. And if she hadn't made that sacrifice, then things for me would have been a lot different. So even though the schools aren't providing, in many cases, what your child may need, sometimes we may have to sacrifice in some other areas to get them that musical instrument or to rent it or something to help them have access to it, because otherwise, you know, how are they going to learn? You know, so I encourage parents, and I really commend the ones who are encouraging their children to learn how to play their instruments.
Well, yeah, all the stuff that you guys are doing is just great. And I think, personally, there's a resurge in lots of younger people wanting to know their craft a little bit more than just pressing a button on a machine. I think I see that happening when you mentioning someone like Esmeralda Spalding. Young ladies like that and others, they actually are putting in the work and great live performance. So congratulations.
I totally agree. Because there was a period of time when it's like the machines were taking over, you know, and I don't have anything against drum machines or sequencers and stuff because I use them myself. But you have to use them, you know, and I let them use you. You don't become the slave, you know, let the machine become the control. And a lot of music from back in the day, I think one of the reasons it's still around is because, you know, it was hard music. I mean, when the drummer played, when a song is coming to the high point of the song, or maybe even taking it to the bridge, like James would be doing, the music would get a little faster, and as the heart speeds up, and it was like live. You could feel the life in it, but if you're locked into what a machine is having you do, then, you know, my heart doesn't beat like that. So, I mean, I like it for a while, but it might not stay in my heart for any decades, of course.
Right.
Yeah, there's when I listen to your music, there's such energy behind it. I mean, you feel there is no way that you cannot get up on the dance floor and dance to some of that funk because it's just that rich. It's just that deep. And when you were talking about live music, it's so funny that I was speaking with another musician. I call him an elder master because we were talking about musicians back in the 50s, and he was saying there wasn't even 50 or 60 musicians back in the 50s, and so we start talking about, oh my goodness, he was talking about harmonutics, we were talking about people like Chet Baker and Shorty Rogers, and we were talking about session, talking about the session players and then being in the union, and like when you go into a club, you know, it wasn't just about listening to the music. You had to feel the music when you walked in, and then they came in like at 10 o'clock in the evening and then played till 3 o'clock in the morning, and then you had a matinee. And so he really took me there. He was teaching me a lot. So I just appreciate everything that you have brought to the world of music. You truly are a living legend. Now, let me ask you this. You talked about your mom. You talked a little bit about your dad. And so how important is spousal support to have a spouse that supports a person that a musician? Because I've heard different stories. What's your take on that, Larry? How important is it to have a spouse that really supports your craft?
My wife is totally supportive, so much so that in 35 years, it'll be 36 this year, I've only been away from her 2 days, and those two separate incidents in 36 years.
That's fantastic.
Wow, congratulations.
Yep.
Now, is your wife's name Tina?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
See? Now, I do my research, Larry, you know. So hello, Tina. We love you here at Coffee Talk Jazz Radio, so we love it. So that's just, that's awesome. Wow.
Hello, darling. Here I am, Tina Graham, right here. You know I'm here.
Hello, Miss Tina. How
hello.
Are you? Surprise.
Love you. Love y'all.
Love you, girl. Your husband is...
Wherever I am, she's right there.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
I know. Surprise, Eric.
Hello. Hey, I'm glad you guys are together right there,
goodness.
In the studio. That's fantastic. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, wherever I am, she's there. And before my daughter got married, I had only been away from her one day in her life. And that, you know, wherever I am, that's where you would see my wife and my daughter on the road, wherever. I will always have that support of having my family there. And I think it's good for me musically, but I also think it's good for our relationship.
Yeah.
It was good for my daughter. I never had to leave her. She always had love coming from us every day, no matter where we were. And so now, as a grown up, you know, she has three children now: 8-year-old Jaden and 4-year-old Gavin and 2-year-old Cyan. And they get the love every day because she's a stay-at-home mom that we used to give to her, and we can see it, you know, in their lives and how they're growing up. So family support, as you mentioned earlier, having your spouse support you, I think is major.
Yeah, it's crucial. I've heard certain artists say, you know, I couldn't stay and do what I do without the support of my wife, because a lot of times you are away or you're in what's called the studio K, where people think, oh, it's so glamorous to make music. I mean, it's a wonderful thing, but it takes a lot to score and to write and to be in the studio and to get it just right. So,
Larry, I like I say, I love all the stuff that you've done, and music has had a profound effect on my life, especially the funk in particular. I'm still bobbing my head to Utopia. I wanted to ask you, the art of music, looking at it in a bigger context, I've read a lot about you and the experience you guys had at Woodstock, and I'm sure you've looked into the faces of thousands of people across the world at concerts. What do you think it is about music that's so powerful and so endless or timeless?
I think what it is that it's a gift that God gave us, along with a lot of other things to make life pleasurable. You know, if we think about it, you know, we don't have to see in color. We could still see and get around if we saw in black and white. But he gave us color. You know, we don't have to have food that's, you know, the variety that he's given us.
Right.
We could just have one something that's really good for us and just eat that and live. But he gave us a variety to enjoy. We don't have to have music, but because we do, it makes life better when it's used in a positive way. And so with the gift, we just have to make sure that we keep on using it in a positive way. You know, to eat is good. To overeat could be a problem. To drink is okay. To overdrink can be a problem. Music, if it's used in a positive way, it's a beautiful thing. It adds so much more to life. It can create a mood. It can enhance a mood. You can be feeling bad and put on some of your favorite stuff and change your whole day. You know, so I think it's very, 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 very important when we use it in the right way. And so my intention personally is to try to continue to create positive, feel-good art music.
Well, thank you so much, Larry. I mean, you've done that, and you guys continue to do it, and I just had to put that out there so the listeners could hear it coming from a legend like you. Thank you for saying that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I think it's very important for the young people to learn to play, to learn how to create. They have to create the next wave of music, the next generation of music. And if you know how to play, then that's a beautiful thing. And again, not knocking those who choose to create music in other ways. You know, not everyone wants to learn how to play an instrument. And there are some people out there meeting with some success that aren't really musicians. They didn't learn how to play, and they're choosing other ways to express themselves. And this, by no means knocking that at all. But for the next wave of music that's going to come our way, the next generation of music, the new creations, I feel very confident that's going to come from some live playing, some learning how to play instruments, drums, guitar, keyboards, and horns, and so forth. I think that that's where we're going to get our next music from, is the ones who are learning how to play now, and those who choose to maybe sample what the new generation will be producing. Well, that's, you know, I'm knocking that, but I look forward to the new creators.
Okay, for my listeners, you can't see me, but you guys know I'm excited because Larry and Tina are here. Please, I'm trying to keep it cool, but I can't. I get excited. I really do. I know you guys think that, you know, she's always cool, calm, and collective. Not today. All right. Okay. We have.
Well, I'm excited, too.
Larry, I am just keeping it real. I got to tell you, for real. I'm telling you, he's played with Prince, Parliament, Funkadelic, Maceo, Parker, Bootsy, my friend George Duke. Okay. All right. So. do you know Greg? Do you know Greg, Larry?
I've been on the stage with Boyer many times, and his trombone playing is amazing. So I know you're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time with him.
Okay, awesome. Okay. My last two questions are, what matters most to you?
My spiritual state, where I am spiritually, because if I can keep that intact, then everything else is going to fall into place. You know, if I can keep myself, I try to read the Bible as often as I can and live by the principles that I study. And, you know, if I can apply that, and I'm imperfect like everybody else, and I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm going to try to live my life according to what I study in the scriptures to the best of my ability, because that'll make me a better husband, a better father, a better grandpa, a better friend, a better musician. You know, and anything I try to do, I'm going to be better at it if I keep God first in my life. So that's my intent.
Okay, well, you know what? I don't even need to ask you the second question. You know what? You covered it. I have to tell you, it has just been my greatest joy to have you to kick off the Living Legend series, and I am so glad that I had the opportunity to talk with you today. You've been a fantastic studio guest, and I hope we can do it again in the not-too-distant future, and so I just want to thank you for that.
Larry and Tina, thank you both. We're just amazed at the wisdom, and thank you both for being here and being so generous and gracious.
And let me say something, hugs and kisses to you, Eric and Bridget. Love y'all so much.
Oh, love you too.
Oh, my God, let me tell you, you guys are absolutely the sweetest people.